We continue our series on forgiveness, and tonight we talk about, well, what about justice? What about justice? Because this is very ingrained in us from a very young age. You know, when you and your sibling or you and your friend get in trouble, what is the first thing you're worried about? Are they going to get in trouble too? We are very keen to make sure that there's justice, that there's justice for us. That when someone wrongs us, even if we retaliated, we want to make sure that someone knows they did something too. And so I want to start tonight by asking you this question, because these two concepts are going to be intertwined. When we talk about justice versus forgiveness, it's going to be very entwined with loving our enemies. And so let me ask you tonight, raise your hand if you have an enemy. Now, we all have Satan. Raise your hand if in your lifetime you have had an enemy. Anybody? Raise your hand if you have had 5 enemies. Raise your hand if you've had 10 enemies. Some of you have 2 hands up. Raise your hand if you've had no enemies ever in your life.
Are we including Satan?
We are not including Satan. Okay. In this life, on this earth. And so let me ask the question, what is an enemy? What creates an enemy? How do you get an enemy? How do you get someone to hate you? Some of you probably know the answer. Go ahead, yeah.
Pull them over and get them a ticket.
Yes. Go ahead. What's yours? How do you get an enemy? By annoying them. Okay, that's one way. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. And so, let's break it down. What is an enemy? What we would define enemy as today is someone who, and it's very simple, hate. Hate's the word that we're going to talk about. Someone who you might have hatred towards, or someone that has hatred towards you. And hatred, you know, sometimes we like to put measurements on hatred, like hatred is like, you know, they throw darts at my picture and they curse and scream whenever I walk by. That's not necessarily hatred. There are lesser forms of hatred. You know, when we don't care about someone, when we don't love, we hate. When we are not compassionate, we hate. When we are not called to be who we are supposed to be with everyone around us, we hate. When we don't have compassion on a certain group or a certain situation or anything, we hate. And when we hate, we create enemies. And so the question for tonight is, we have people out there that we have wronged and that have wronged us. What we're going to talk about tonight is, how do we get to that step of forgiveness with them? Because, see, an easy way to define an enemy is there anyone who you have refused to forgive in your life? Even for a short while. Where you said, it is not worth reconciling with this person. I want to stay in a sinful state with them, and I want them to stay in a sinful state. You see, most of us, sadly, we go through this life, for better or for worse, no matter how hard we try, with a few people who we may feel are our enemies. Or more honestly, just some people that seem to hate us for no good reason. We just can never get them on our side. They just never come around to liking us. And there are some people who we've offended and who we apologize to, but they just refuse to accept our apologies. There are people that we work with that we've angered, who are jealous of us, who have set themselves against us. There are people in our families who hold a grudge against us for some mysterious reason that we've just never been able to comprehend. And there are people who just seem to dislike us or wish us ill will for no good reason. And that's a sad part of human life. But then it also goes a little bit deeper. For some of us, there are people that have abused us. For some of us, there are people that have betrayed us. For some of us, there are people that have taken advantage of us. whether it's in the workplace and you thought you were going to get a promotion, but somebody else wanted that promotion and they said things that weren't true and they got the promotion, or, you know, there's dishonest things and you were being honest and you were treated unfairly for being honest and speaking up. We can create enemies so many different ways. And sometimes we enjoy holding on to our hatred. We enjoy withholding forgiveness. Maybe there's a family member that has just gotten under your skin, and you don't care to invite them to the next family gathering. But see, here's the thing. Jesus says, very simply, in Matthew chapter 5, he's talking to his disciples, who know exactly what we go through as well. And he says, you have heard it was said, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. And this is a concept that all of us can understand. Love your neighbor, hate your enemy. You know, if someone has wronged you, if someone is against you, if someone is, you know, a different than you, it's okay to not like them. Love your neighbors, though. But Jesus comes and he says, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. Interesting point here. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. We'll stop there for a second, because this is an interesting concept. Because when we look at society as a whole, and we look at ourselves as a whole, usually when someone's teasing us, when someone's hurting us, when we don't think, you know what, I need to treat them fairly. Even if they're against me, even if they've wronged me, even if they've been offensive, abused me, or hurt me, I need to treat them fairly. But what God tells us is the mark of a child of God is I treat everyone fairly. I make it rain on the fields of the heathens as well as my followers. I bring sunshine and bring about crops and prosperity to those who will never worship me. And to those who do. I don't play favorites. I bless all. And I love all. And that's an incredible thing to say. And so he continues on. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors, when this is considered the worst of society, are not they doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. And so this is a tough task. How do we do this? How do we begin to love our neighbors? How do we begin to focus on forgiveness rather than justice? Because so often in our life, when we've been sinned against, when we've been wronged, we want justice. Justice is God's job. We're supposed to focus on forgiveness. How do we even begin to do that? I think it's interesting, our lesson for tonight, I know I was reading earlier, I want to invite you, if you would like to follow along, I'm going to read it all to you. The story of David and Saul. In 1 Samuel, we're going to start in chapter 19. 1 Samuel 19. Now, at this point in our story, Saul is king of Israel, and Saul was anointed by God, and he took the job of king, but then he began to stray from God's calling. And so Samuel went and anointed David. And David is going to be the king, but he is not currently. Saul is still the king. And David's getting all kinds of great publicity. And David's just the golden boy. That golden boy that you just hate. And Saul hates him. And so we're going to see what happens in 1 Samuel chapter 19. Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. But Jonathan was very fond of David and warned him, "My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are, and I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out." Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you. And what has he done that all he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all of Israel, and you saw it, and you were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason? Saul listened to Jonathan and took his oath. As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death. So Jonathan called David and told him the whole conversation. He brought him to Saul, and David was with Saul as before. Once more war broke out, and David went out and fought the Philistines. He struck them down with such a force they fled before him. But an evil spirit from the Lord came upon Saul, and he was sitting in his house with a spear in his hand. Never a good sign. While David was playing the harp, Saul tried to pin him against the wall with the spear. But David eluded him, and Saul drove the spear into the wall. That night David made good his escape. Saul sent men to David's house to watch it and to kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, warned him, "If you don't run for your life tonight, tomorrow you'll be killed." So she helps him down through a window and he escapes. And so, taking a break here, we're going to turn to chapter 24 here in a second. But stopping here and looking at this, what we see is David is being treated unfairly, unjustly. Saul is jealous of him. Saul is jealous of his victories. An evil spirit is even causing this corroding of his mind to just be filled with wrath and anger towards David. He has made an oath that he's going to break. He's trying to kill David. He's even sending people after David. He himself is trying to kill David. This is going to go on for the next couple chapters. He's going to constantly be looking for David to kill him. Now, how many of you have ever had somebody out to destroy you? Not Satan, somebody on earth. I mean, I would imagine at some time in our life there's been somebody that you're just going, "Man, what did I do to you? I'm just trying to live my life. I'm trying to do the right thing. Why are you after me? What have I done?" You know, so often in tragedy, you know, what's the two-word question that everybody asks? Why me? You know, some of the most powerful moments in my short ministry have been being there next to somebody through a tragedy. Once in my ministry, I got the opportunity to talk to a young lady who had just been raped. And while that was one of the most awful conversations I've ever had, it was also one of the most powerful conversations I've ever had to get to speak restitution and redemption and healing into that wound. And something, I was at a conference a couple weeks ago in Orlando, and something very powerful, one of the speakers said that I just, you know how sometimes you just hear something and you just cannot get it out of your head? And he said that he had just gotten back from Mexico, and he was at an orphanage that his church had started for young girls that had been kidnapped into the sex trade. And so they started this school for the girls. They rescued them out of these situations, and they started a school for these girls. The average age in that school is 9 years old. I have not gotten that out of my head since I've left Orlando. And I look at my little 2.5-year-old daughter. I think, who would do this to girls? That was the average. That means there's younger. And so often in tragedy, this is the questions we ask. Why me? What did I do? Why are people after me? Why are people hurting me? Why did this happen? David's got to be sitting here imagining, this is not fair, God. I didn't ask you to be king. Did he? God came and said, "It's you, buddy." And now the king of the entire country, the nation, is trying to kill him every turn. And then he'll say, "Oh, I'm sorry, David. I won't do it again." And then a couple of verses later, he's throwing another spear or he's sending another army. And you got to be thinking, David's just sitting there going, God, what? What did I do? How is this fair? God, I want justice. I want justice. How many times in your life have you sat there and said that? God, I want justice. I don't want the passive God. I don't want the forgiving God. I don't want the loving God. I want the Old Testament wrath God. Get them back. Have you ever prayed that prayer? I know I have. Have you? Okay, some of you too. God, don't go easy. I've prayed that. And I've meant it. I've truly meant it. God, I want justice. I don't want to forgive. I don't want to move forward. I don't want to reconcile. I want justice. Get them. Bring the wrath. Chapter 24. David gets his chance. After Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, David is in the desert of En-Gedi, and Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all of Israel and set out to look for David and his men near the crags of the wild goats. He came to the sheep pens along with the way. A cave was there, and Saul went into the cave to relieve himself. David and his men were far back in the cave. The men said, "This is the day the Lord spoke of. When they said to you, 'I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish.'" Stop there for 1 second. So we know that he's been told he's going to get the opportunity. I'm going to put your enemy in your grasp. But did God say for you to exact justice? No. What did he say? For you to do with what you wish. Okay? Important. Here it comes. Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Afterward, David was conscience stricken for having cut off the corner of his robe. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master." His what? His master. Continue on. "The Lord's anointed, or lift my hand against him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." With these words, David rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went his way. Then David went out of the cave and called out to Saul, "My lord the king." When Saul looked behind him, David bowed down and prostrated himself with his face to the ground. He said to Saul, "Why did you listen when the men..." Oh, where am I? He said to Saul, "Why do you listen when men say, 'David is bent on harming you'? This day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, 'I will not lift my hand against my master because he is the Lord's anointed.' See, my father, look at this piece of your robe in my hand. I cut off the corner of your robe, but did not kill you. Now understand and recognize that I am not guilty of wrongdoing or rebellion. I have not wronged you, but you are hunting me down to take my life. May the Lord judge between you and me." Pay attention to this. "And may the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you. As the old saying goes, 'From evildoers come evil deeds,' so my hand will not touch you." What a powerful, powerful couple verses from David. He has the opportunity to seek the revenge that he deserves, the justice he deserves. Saul has brought a 3,000-man special forces army to take out David and his men. Saul has constantly been listening to people saying, "He's going to kill you, he's going to kill you." And David's saying, "I'm not going to kill you." But who's Saul listening to? The evil. And he's been after him, after him, after him. He has the chance to seek revenge. And what does he do? He comes out and he says, "You're the anointed one. I prostrate myself before you. I give you the honor you deserve, even though I mean, you have wronged me. But I'm going to lay down before you, call you Father, call you Master, call you King, the Anointed One. I'm going to give you the respect that you deserve. But verse 13, I'm going to let the Lord take care of the vengeance. And I'm just going to do what God has called me to do, and honor you and not harm you. Friends, this is our lesson for the night. How do we do what David did? How do we, in the face of being persecuted against, being hurt, being abused? I mean, some of us, if I was to ask you what's the worst thing that's ever happened to you, God willing, some of you would say things that are like low on the meter. But, you know, when we live in a day and age where 1 in 3 American women have been sexually abused in their life, and there's, how many gang violence and there's shootings and deaths and there's all kinds of different terrible things that have happened in our lives. I would imagine some of you fall into those categories. Some of you, if I were to say, what is the worst thing in your life, you would truly have some awful stories that you have had to go through. How can we, like David, set aside our own pride, our own will, and say, Lord, You take the vengeance. You avenge me. I'm going to learn how to forgive them. I'm going to learn to love them. How do we do that? Do any of you know? Because, I mean, this is the hardest thing. It seems absolutely impossible, does it not? How do we love our enemy? How do I look at the person that has hurt me and say, I love you? And I'm going to respect you, and I'm going to honor you, and I'm going to try and reconcile this and let God deal with the justice. How do we get to that point? I think it's two things. We have to understand this, and this is a powerful thing for us to understand. There, when we are faced with loving our enemies versus wanting them destroyed, there are two ways to destroy your enemy. Two ways. One, the old-fashioned way. What is it? Kill them. And do we laugh, but does this not happen all the time? All throughout history? And maybe it's not as drastic. Maybe it's a family member that crushed us in the past, and killing them would be the equivalent of what? Cutting them off. Out of the family. Not talking to them. Not coming to any event. Not coming to the weddings. Not coming to the funerals. But we have two options with enemies. Kill them, end it, whatever it is, just strike it dead. Or the second option with an enemy. How do you destroy an enemy? Transform them. Transform them. Those are our two options. You want to kill an enemy off? You want to strike it dead? You want to cut it off? You can. There's two ways. Kill it or transform them. Which one do you think Jesus called us to? I think so too. I think so too. Because see, Romans 12, and if you want to write down a good verse to take home tonight to kind of just pray through and meditate on, Romans 12, 17 through 21. Romans 12, 17 through 21. This is what we are called to do as Christians. This is how we begin to do this process of, you know what, God? I'm not going to kill it. I'm going to transform it. This is how we do it. Romans 12, 17 through 21. It says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Friends, in your life, why does that never work? Come on, you know this. How many of you have tried to repay evil for evil? How did that work out? Why? Why does it not work out? Say it again. It escalates it. Why else? They yell at you? Okay, go ahead. Yeah, you're stooping to their level. And so he starts it off right here. Do not repay evil for evil. Friends, it doesn't work. Does that stop us from trying it sometimes? Nope. But he says, do not repay evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. Does everyone include your enemy? Yes. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. What does that tell us to do? If it's possible, as depending on you, what does that call you to do? That you have to go your part. No matter what has happened, you have to go your part. If they don't go their part, whose fault is that? Theirs. But what are you called to do? You're called to go yours. Okay. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. Now, there you go. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Exactly, Russ. That's exactly the point. That gives, yes, absolutely, that gives us peace. Let me ask you this, and this is a fun question. Who do you think is better at, just almighty wrath? You or God? Yeah. It's kind of like when I was a kid and I got one of my frequent spankings. If it was mom home, I wasn't that worried. When dad came home and it was spanking time, I got worried. Friends, if you truly want revenge, if you truly want wrath, you are terrible at it. Let the big man take it. Because he can do things just way beyond you can imagine. And that's what the verse is saying. Dear friends, don't take revenge. Leave room for what? God's wrath. You let him take this over. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will what? Heap burning coals on his head. Why is that? Why is that? Guilt. Guilt and shame. And also this. If we are called to not kill off, but to transform, what is the first process in that? They have to receive law. They have to be able to see their sin. How do we do that? By loving them. By them going, what is wrong with you? I just did this to you. Why are you loving me? Man, I feel guilty. I feel shame for what I've done to you. You are doing what you've been called to do as a Christian, that you are helping them see their guilt. And you are bringing about restitution. You're bringing about an opportunity where you can be reconciled to one another. And so he says, this is going to heap burning holes on their head. It is very hard to continually be mean to somebody when they are loving you just in your face right back. Is it not? You really come out looking bad. And so, verse 21, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Friends, this is one of the most powerful lessons for us to learn. That we are called to transform. Let God handle the justice. Let God handle the revenge. Believe me, He's way better at it. And you learn to love. See, when we love the law, we love when the law brings justice to an offender, do we not? We don't like it when the law brings justice to us, but we love it when it's somebody else. And the big question that we have to ask is, how do we do this? Because we can read Romans 12 all we want, right? How do we do this? What gets us on the first steps to actually executing loving our enemies and truly saying, you know what? I'm going to transform this person, not kill them off. Prayer is a good first step. Prayer to start changing your heart. Prayer to start saying, Lord, let me see it how you see it. That I'm a sinful being. They're a sinful being. I want you to forgive me. I can't withhold forgiveness from someone else. And I need to forgive them. But the first step is always prayer and looking to Jesus. Looking to Jesus. Let me ask you this. Was Jesus ever treated unjustly and punished unfairly and persecuted unrighteously? Yeah. So does he know what that feels like? Does he know what it's like to take on a burden and a persecution that you didn't even have coming? That wasn't even directed at you? I think of all people ever to walk this earth, he knows more than anybody unfair treatment. So when you sit there and you go, God, you have no idea. This is so unfair. That's one of those moments that I think you feel the slap of God come down and go, you idiot. What? I don't know how unfair this life can be? Look at what happened to my son. And so we look at Jesus and we sit there. And that's the first step, is in our prayer, in our conversation with God. We go, God, first step, I know that you know what I'm feeling. First step, I know that you know what I'm feeling. You understand me. You understand what I'm feeling. That is important. How many times in conversations do we start it off and we don't even continue the conversation because we just say, you know what, you don't understand. I should be allowed to be angry with this person. You don't understand. God's sitting there saying, no, I understand. Keep going. Let me tell you what happened with my son Jesus. Okay? And then here's the next step. In return, God comes to us and he says, okay, you've been treated unfairly. Here's the second step, final step. Follow my ways and I will set you free. Do you want to carry this burden? Do you want to carry this anger? Do you want to carry this pain? Do you want to carry this sorrow? Do you want to carry this shame? Do you want to carry this? Or do you want to have a new identity in Christ? Because this is your option. You can be the person that was abused, that was neglected, that was hurt, that was shamed, that was betrayed. You can let that be your identity. And you can walk around with that badge and show your anger and show your wrath and try and get justice and do it all yourself. That can be your life. That can be your identity if you want it. Or you can come before me and you can say, God, you know what? You know what I'm feeling. I'm giving it all to you. Set me free. Give me a new identity in Jesus Christ. That while I might be someone who is abused here on this earth, I am a blessed child to you. And while I might be someone who has been shamed and embarrassed and betrayed, I am beloved by you. And while I might be someone who has been hurt and spiritually, physically, emotionally, everything, I am loved and I'm cherished. I am held up. I am esteemed. I am your beloved child. You spend time thinking about me every second of every day. I am the apple of your eye. I am your prized possession. I am loved by you. Yes, Lord, set me free. That's my new identity. I'm not going to be someone that walks around living with the guilt and the pain and the shame of what has happened in my past. I'm going to be the person that walks forward saying, I have a new identity in Jesus Christ. And I'm not going to be the person that just reflects on all the junk in my past and holds on to that pain and holds on to that hurt and holds on to that anger and that vengeance. I'm going to be the person that lets it go and sets myself free. And says, you know what, Lord? You get the justice. You get the vengeance. I'm going to say, walk up to that murderer and say, I forgive you. And I mean, I printed off a bunch of powerful stories and I don't have time to read them, but I just want to say, you know, I saw this story, the Green River Killer. Do you guys remember that from some years ago? And each family of the murdered victims got a chance to sit on the stand and say something to him. And one of them, his name was Rule is his last name. But he looked at him and he said this, Mr. Ridgway, that's the killer. There are people here that hate you. I'm not one of them. You've made it difficult for me to live up to what I believe. And that's what God says to do. And so I forgive you. You are forgiven, sir. And he got off the stand. That man said, you know what? I don't want to feel this. I don't want this pain. I don't want to walk around the rest of my life as the father of a murdered daughter who's angry and wants hate and revenge. I want to set myself free. You know what? God will deal with you in a way much more just than I can, and much more just than the American justice system can. I'm going to leave it to God, and I'm going to forgive you, and I'm going to walk out of here set free. More stories. This woman right here tells a story of finding out about her husband who cheated on her. After 20 years of marriage, 4 kids, cheated on her. She said, you know what? Once the initial shock passed, I was faced with a choice. I could either fight for my marriage or let this event change everything. It took 6 months of counseling, but eventually I was able to forgive him and we could move on. I didn't want my whole life to be an angry, bitter ex-wife. I wanted to forgive and move forward. This woman writes a story about being abused by her mother all of her childhood. And then it came to the point where her mother had a massive stroke and was bedridden, couldn't talk, couldn't do anything, and was stuck in a bed, and she was the only one that could sit by her bedside and be with her. And she said, for the first month, she sat there angry and furious. She would yell at her mother while nobody was looking. She would do all kinds of mean things. And all of a sudden, she said, you know what? How can I sit here and do this? You're 73 years old. It was so many years in the past. I don't want to be this person that let their mother die in this state, and I'm just angry. I want to fix this. And so she talks about putting her head in her mother's chest and just crying and saying, I forgive you. And her mother passed away peacefully the next day. And she said, I'm so glad I didn't just carry this anger and this burden for the rest of my life, but I just forgave her. Because what does it matter for me to hold on to this? One more. How many of you remember the Amish school where the guy walked in and shot the kids? Do you know what happened afterwards? In the face of such a tragedy, one can only imagine the hurt and the anger the loved ones of the victims might feel. In an extraordinary demonstration of forgiveness, members of the Amish community, including family members of the deceased victims, attended Robert's funeral. He shot himself before the police could get him. Attended his funeral and comforted his widow. The Amish community did not stop there. They also offered financial support to his widow for the rest of her life. Why? Why? Why would anyone feel compelled to do that? Because leave the justice to God and just forgive. Let it go. Be set free. And you know what? How we do that? I think the third step is kind of this. We have to be able to see our enemy through God's eyes. They weren't born wanting to do this. They weren't born wanting to be an evil, hatred person. They're a sinner. They're hurt. They're lost. They're confused. There is something causing them to do the evil that they've done. And we should have compassion on them. Because we want God to have compassion on us when we get stuck in our ways and we do evil and we get stubborn and we don't listen and we hurt people for no reason. And that's how we should see Him. And we should see them as closing with this, the lost son. You remember the lost son who goes and squanders everything. And you know what? He said, I would rather eat the food of the pigs at my dad's place. I, you know, how many of you have messed up in your life and you have that speech already rehearsed in your head of, you know what, I'm going to punish myself. You know, like before you even go to your parent or your spouse or whoever it is, you know, you already have your whole speech rehearsed of, this is how I'm going to punish myself. You don't even need to do it. I know what I deserve and this is it. And that's what he's doing. He's practicing his speech. I will be your hired hand. But the beauty of Jesus Christ is this. While we are all lost sons, while we are all straying, we are all hurting, Jesus comes and he says, no, put a clean robe on him and get the fattened calf and have a celebration because my lost son has returned. And that celebration, that undeserved grace is for us. How dare we look at the other lost son out there and say, but don't have a celebration for them when they come. They are lost too. And friends, that's what it all comes down to. How do you forgive? You remember that they're the lost son out there, and they deserve the banquet too. Because none of us deserve the banquet. And so we don't withhold the forgiveness. We find a way to forgive and reconcile, and we leave the justice to God. Comments or questions? Then all God's people said?